Relatively Geeky presents Doom Speak. In this episode, we'll be looking at Ugly Orange Rock Monster number 12. Sorry, that's how it is in the original Latverian. In the English translation for hashtag Big Comic, it's just called The Thing. Number 12 from Marvel Comics, cover dated 1984. But first, a little feedback on last episode where we covered three issues of Doom 2099. Billy D. from A World on Fire called it a good episode and added a Hail Doom to that message. And Manuel Carmona echoed Billy's Hail Doom. Clinton from Coffee and Comics said he was excited that we were getting closer and closer to the big stuff in 2099. The stuff I'm dying for the prof to cover. Good times in the future. Well, we'll see about that, I guess, Clinton. Patience. Dr. Ange said that he was now very intrigued to see if Doom 2099 is, in fact, actually Doom. And Laurel from the Hunters podcast said that it was a fun episode despite the supersized synopsis. That made it more interesting to listen to. I'm interested to learn which possible Doom is the real Doom. Well, Ange, Clinton, Laurel, everyone else, all we can say here is stay tuned. Social media support for that episode came from Jeremiah Jones Goldstein from comics.blog. Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Sir Luke Giaconetti, Sir I Was Joe, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, Ed Moore from the Boom Addiction Podcast, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Chris Lydon 7, Chris Willett, Vic in Phoenix, Max Reads Comics, Chris from Professor Frenzy, which is a show, Mondo Burger, and Countess Ruth, and Count Darren of the Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network. Thanks for all that feedback and support, everybody. I am pleased by that. And so is Doom. Which brings us to our issue for this episode. The Thing, number 12, was cover dated June 1984 and had a cover price of 60 cents. I don't have a note on the cover of this one that would indicate that someone gave it to me, and I think I've had it a while, so I probably got this issue out of the quarter bins back at the old In the Ballpark store here in Central Ohio. The cover shows the big, ugly orange rock monster in his wrestling singlet, which is an awesome fashion choice, holding a purple horse over his head. Riding the horse is a red-headed lady in vaguely medieval Nordic garb, pointing a spear right at the thing. And behind this all is Doom doing what he does best, looming. He is much larger than the other characters on the cover. And let this be a lesson to all artists in Marvel Comics, because when you're flipping through a long box of back issues, the only thing you see is those top couple of inches of the cover. And if those top few inches contain the looming figure of Dr. Doom, everybody in their right mind is, of course, going to buy that issue. No matter how much Doom may or may not actually be in the issue, spoilers. If he's on the cover, every faithful member of Friends of Old Doom is going to buy that issue, and it will be an instant bestseller. No matter how much Doom may or may not actually be in the issue, spoilers. The story, Doom, was written by John Byrne, with art by Ron Wilson and Joe Sinnott. This story is also notated as Rocky Grimm Space Ranger, Part 2. We start where alien wind stirs alien sands, and in the distance, alien mountains claw at an alien sky. And looking toward that strange cosmic vista is Ben Grimm, Earthman, adventurer, sometimes monster, the man called The Thing. According to Reed, all the other planets and stars in this here galaxy God wiped away to make room for this planet and the Secret Wars. That's right. The Thing is on Battleworld, although he thinks he could be in any desert on Earth. And then what do you know? I turn a corner and there's a cover scene right off of thrilling Space Sagas. The sands shift and change constantly under his feet, altering hue and texture, flowing now like mercury, bright and hot in the high, sunless moon. And then he sees a series of peaked hills that seem manufactured. The peaks still rise above, skeletal fingers groping towards the bright artificial sky. The sheer glass of the cliffs are as smooth as polished glass. Ben finds a fissure between two peaks and enters a verdant wonderland. This looks like home, like Earth. One side, varlet! Ben hears and sees a dark blue horse running at him with a barbarian rider atop, his long ponytail flying behind him majestically. Ben jumps out of the way as he gallops, calling out some insults after him. Surprisingly, the great beast halts, swinging around to face a suddenly abashed Ben Grimm, also an about-to-get-bashed Ben Grimm. And he comes right back at him, his craggy face set into lines of steel-edged rage. Insolent dog, you dare speak thus of Hanrak, of Len? Hanrak swings his sword at him, commenting on Ben's insolence. The blade flashes like solid light in the directionless dayglow. The blade stops suddenly as it strikes a big, ugly, orange, rock-monstered hand. Okay, wise guy, now let's play this my way. Upon seeing the totality of the big, ugly, orange rock monster, Hanrak, of course, falls to the ground, fainting. But the transformed Ben Grimm has no time to consider this strange turn of events than he had to contemplate the unexpected nature of his surroundings. Huzzah! Have at you, monster! And thus enters the redhead lady from the cover on her purple steed, Lance, pointing right at the Thing. Oh, great, Thing says, revealing his big, ugly orange sexism. Now I get the lady's auxiliary. But out of chivalry, he takes down the overgrown pony instead of the dame. Yeah, Ben, because that's so much better. The Thing wants to chat with the sweet thing, but she is not interested in that plan, saying she does not chat with servants of the Dark Lord. He says he's just a traveler, but she's not convinced. He transforms back to Ben Grimm, hoping that will help. Now let's talk nice and not start beating each other's brains out all at once. We learn that the female barbarian is Tariana. Tariana is Hanrak's betrothed, and together they've been struggling against the efforts of an evil wizard. As they speak, Hanrak darts off and the two pursue. Be careful, Tariana advises Ben, for now we have entered the Vale of... And then we get a full page splash with one small insert panel. A full page of the wizard. But Ben knows the truth, looking up at the, I'm going to say maybe 60-foot-tall being before them, clad in silver, with an awesome green cloak. Holy jumping cats, that ain't no wizard, that's Dr. Doom! In response, the energy bolt leaps across the clearing like a thing alive, streaking past the startled to strike, Ben! who is unsure of how Doom got so big, but he's pretty sure it's Doom. I'd know that lovable personality anywhere. This convinces Tiriana that he is not, in fact, a servant of this armored titan. And Ben things out, and it's clobbering time. Until a large armored boot clobbers Ben. Within a few pages, Ben has concluded that this is, in fact, some crazy kind of Doom robot. And he uproots a large tree and tosses it in the giant's direction as a projectile. The tree trunk is an unlikely missile, but Ben's aim is true as an archer's, and surprisingly effective. Proving that this is not, in fact, the actual factual Doom. Like Goliath felled by David's pebble, the monstrous Doom topples and is no more. But as Ben looks after the dazed Tiriana, Hanrak attacks him. Touch not the fallen female or feel my fury. All of a sudden, Ben finds himself surrounded by smaller Dooms, regular-sized Dooms, fragments of the fallen Colossus. They begin pummeling the thing one by one. Tiriana has recovered and tries to convince Hanrak to help the man. Let the scale fall from your eyes. He is our only possible salvation. Hanrak is unconvinced, and the couple's argument escalates a bit. She lunges at him. Even the massive, thewed Hanrak is for a moment staggered by the power and ferocity of her attack. Forgive me, but I must save the Grim. But Doom, or maybe it's one of his robots, tells her that it's not his wish that she interfere. And even in this far place, the will of Doom is not to be defied. Despite feeling powerless in Doom's presence, her legs weakening, Tiriana summons one last ounce of strength to strike against her greatest fear, and strike she does with a scrow! You zapped that one Doom with that electronic pig sticker, and they all vanished. She fears that she has brought her betrothed great shame this day, to fall at the hands of a mere woman, then questions the adjective mere she uses to describe herself, then tosses the man over his shoulder, and they head off. Our town site is beyond that rise, Grim, an hour or so on foot. The next hour is pleasant and silent, although the woman casts many furtive, questioning glances at her rock-like companion. His mind is too occupied by other thoughts to notice. This day has presented Ben Grimm with many questions. And though he does not know it yet, perhaps the greatest lies just beyond the hilltop. And then we turn to the last page and see a splash that shows a familiar castle and surrounding town. There, Ben Grimm, there is my home. It can't be, but it is. It's Doomstadt, Doc Doom's hometown. But that's on Earth. And Earth is millions of light years away. Ain't it? The end.
You're listening to Prairie Justice, a Greg Sanders Vigilante podcast.
Is an exploration of the DC Comics character, the first superhero to use the name of the Vigilante. First published in Action Comics 42 in September 1941, amid comics' golden age and carried as a continuous feature, during those years, the Vigilante was also a member of the Seven Soldiers of Victory and was one of the first DC heroes to appear on the cinema screen in his own serial. Reappearing in the Bronze Age, the Vigilante had a 1970s renaissance throughout the DC universe. Greg Saunders, the Prairie Troubadour, leads a double life as a modern country and western musician, while also delivering justice throughout North America as a masked crime fighter, using the tactics and weapons of his rural Wyoming upbringing. With his friends Billy Gunn and Stuff Leong, many a nefarious scheme was foiled with six guns, ingenuity, a motorcycle, and a twirling lariat. Howdy, I'm Ranger Gord. Help me follow the trail of the vigilante on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.
And we're back. First things first, to everyone from New York City, sorry about that Ben Grimm voice. No offense intended. Also, I did make a mistake in the summary. I said that Ben thought it was Doom at first, only to change his mind a few pages later. Well, upon a closer reread, for purposes of analysis, he did in fact know right away. I just missed the little word not in one of his speech bubbles or narrative boxes. And yes, during the summary, I did include a lot of the comic book text. That's because it's really good. I think John Byrne did an excellent job on that front, including a lot of nice narrative and dialogue bits. I think the scripting of the issue was the high point, the strength. And that's not to say that the art is weak. Again, it's Byrne. It's the 80s, so it's very solid. It's quite good. He did a good job with the scale, for one thing, the big beasts, and then the even bigger Doom. And speaking of those beasts, those animals, there's a cliche that one of the reasons so few Western comics are produced these days is because so few artists can convincingly draw horses, and or, probably related, like drawing horses. But Byrne does it really well here. And other than the colors, he doesn't cheat here by making these, you know, alien horses with their own wonky anatomy. He doesn't cheat. These are horses as we would recognize them, really well-drawn horses. And I think that the midnight blue for one and the deep purple for the other are excellent color choices. Those really stand out. They are outstanding. But wait a minute, this is not Third Degree Burn. Not that there's anything wrong with that podcast. It's just that this is not that. This, in case you forgot, is Doomspeak. So let's talk for a few minutes about the Doom content and ask how it is treated here. First, the people of this land fear and respect him. That's good. This is his world, or at least a world of his legacy, the way I think of Battleworld. Doom had certainly had major stories in the 60s and 70s, important stories, significant stories. All the cool people understood that he was the burgeoning superstar of the comics world. We've talked about some of those old stories, Supervillain Team-Up as an example. And of course, the epic FF Annual number 2. But an important breakout moment for Doom, in terms of the greater comic book and public awareness even, was his inclusion as a major force in the original Secret Wars from right around here, 1984. And the recent third series of Secret Wars amps up Doom's importance even more. And let's just forget that Secret Wars 2 ever happened. Okay? So this story on this battle world, by that nature, I consider it tangentially related to Doom, and I liked the setting. So that is considered, albeit indirectly, positive points in the Doom column. And of course, our normal, regular-sized Doom is pretty epic. But if that's true, then a 60-foot-tall Doom has got to be like 60 divided by to carry the 10 times better, right? And a 60-foot-tall Doom that splits into like a dozen regular-sized Doom bots to put a whoopin' on the big, ugly orange rock monster, that, my friends, is a win. No, it wasn't really Doom, technically speaking, I suppose. And it did take half an issue to even get to that point. So not a ton of direct Doom-related content. Like I said before, the setting counts as indirectly Doomish, as does, I suppose, Tariana's reference to Doom as the wizard and her abject fear of him. Those are good bits. And of course, our cliffhanger is the presence of Doomstadt and the castle at the end. So those are all good bits of Doomism. But, let's be honest, it's not as much Doom as we'd prefer, and he didn't have much dialogue, but Byrne did a good job with the few things that the big Doom robot said, with good amounts of narrative boxes from Doom's perspective. And yes, overall, the story is certainly told from Grimm's perspective. I mean, hashtag Big Comic was clearly being bought off to even print a comic starring a member of the failing four. But even with that huge disadvantage, Doom, or his simulacrum, is given a few moments of glory, such as his cold, metallic voice turning Tariana's insides to jelly. So no, Byrne doesn't give Doom a lot to say, but yes, what he does say really works. And I guess in the interest of reviewing a comic book, we probably should talk about the rest of the story, the rest of the characters. I like the barbarian lady. I like that sweet thing. Hey, don't blame me. That was Ben's own description of the woman. Now, from the cover, I thought they might be related to Asgardians. She could be a Valkyrie, but that doesn't seem to be the case. They identify themselves as the people of Leen, L-E-E-N-N. I don't know if they have a long history in comics, but I do believe that this is the first I've heard of them. And she is a good head taller than the thing, and I like that.
She is hot.
Yes, Shag, we know that.
Shag's absolutely right.
Okay, Mike, I get it. She's an attractive woman. We all know this, okay? And but more importantly, I think she and her boyfriend are pretty fierce fighters, truth to tell. And the action scenes are very good. And the bit at the beginning is pretty fella. And the bit at the beginning is pretty funny, where the fella, Hanrak, he rides right by Ben, and he'd keep on riding, except that Ben yells out a few choice words at him as he's riding by, knocking him down. And so Hanrak stops, turns his mount around, and fights Ben, which was a pretty fun little scene. So John Byrne overall does a good job with Ben, and you have to feel for Ben. I mean, this is a gentleman who has as a quote-unquote best friend an egomaniac who ruined his life by dragging him along on his quixotic space trip through the cosmic rays. Best friend or guinea pig? You decide. And fortunately for Ben, he's not the most annoying member of the team. So that's something to be said for him. Yes, he's objectionable, but he's among the least objectionable member of that particular team. So that's something in his favor, right? He's still big, he's still orange, he's still really ugly. And he's still a hideous rock monster. So obviously, there's only so much about him that I can like. But John Byrne does his darndest with Ben, and he actually comes across as an okay fella. So the issue summary is this. The Thing, issue 12, mildly recommended. Not enough Doom, certainly not as much Doom as the deceptive cover would deceptively make you deceptively think. But as you know, mild recommendation is pretty high praise for an issue starring, quote-unquote, a member of that effing family. But be that as it may, just as a general comic book issue, there's some really good work done here. And as silly as it is, and I mentioned it already, yes, The horses are really well drawn, and I really like the two different colors. That's a little touch, but a good one. So I'm not going to be rushing out in a buying frenzy to make sure I grab the next issue from the next nearest cheapest bin. But if I do find later issues of this, if, of course, Doom is involved again, I'd think about a purchase. But I don't need to know where this story goes next without a few hints of Doom's involvement. So again, mild recommendation. It's just a bit of a misfit for a Doom-centric podcast. But that is the risk I run here, both on Doom Speak and The Quarterbin. I select the books to review, and even after reading them, I very rarely change my mind. I cover them, I talk about them, even if, like this one, I don't have a ton to say. But fear not, friends of old Doom, for next time, we are going back to the future. Returning to a title starring the Doc himself from the coming end of this century, which just can't arrive soon enough. So next time, we will gather to study the exploits of the man, the myth, the Doom, as we will be looking at Doom 2099 issues 22 and 23. So if you have any feedback on this episode, this issue, this series, Battle World, or anything related to the Good Doctor, please don't hesitate to contact me. You can do that via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook or blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening. Take care. Merry Christmas. And hail Doom.
Hail Doom! Hail Doom! Hail Doom! Hail Doom! Hail Doom! Hail Doom!